Hello, this is Roy Thomas, and you're listening to the Power Cosmic Podcast.
That's right, friends. You've been waiting for the podcast that talks about the things you love. Well, go no further, because you've reached the Power Cosmic Podcast. Each week, legendary Comic-Con promoter Mitch Halleck of the Terrific Con and legendary finder of lost things John Cimino of Saturday Morning Collectibles at the Raynham Flea Market, booth A89 and 90, will talk about the stuff you love. Now sit back and talk about comics, TV, movies, toys, and more. It's the Power Cosmic Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Cosmic... the Power Cosmic Podcast. I got a little ahead of myself there. I'm just in the throes of excitement. You know, it's a new year. It's a new month. It's February. It's the month of love. We got movies coming out. We got a lot of stuff going on. I just came off from a grueling exercise routine. I was on my spin bike, and I'm not as fit as our friend here, but before I go on about my sweating, let's bring it up to a man who's physically fit, if not so mentally. They call him the Stretch Hulk. You know him, you love him, as the proprietor of the Raynham Flea Market booth A89 and 90, the writer of such articles that appear in back issue of the Jack Kirby Collection, and Alter Ego Magazine, the personal friend and manager of Mr. Roy Thomas. Ladies and gentlemen, the longest introduction on podcasting, Mr. John A. Cimino.
You're going to have to add a little one more to that, too, because now I'm also a writer of Retro Fan. Holla!
Retro Fan, is that a new publication from the good folks at Tomorrow Press?
Yes, and the first issue comes out in June, and this is probably what they're trying to do, is this is probably going to be their first legit national magazine. By saying that, I mean, we know Alter Ego and... Jack Kirby Collector is in any comic book store in the world, but it's more particularly in comic book stores. But Retro Fan, they're going to be trying to get that not just in comic book stores, but also it'll be in Stop and Shop, it'll be at CVS, it'll be at Barnes and Noble. This is going to be the first legit. They're trying to. I don't know if it's going to happen, but they're trying to do that.
Well, I mean, Retro is
It's written more mainstream. They're gearing it to, obviously, the first issue, I don't know if anybody has seen it, but it's going to be Lou Ferrigno, but it has a lot of things that appeal to toys, to TV shows. Everything retro is cool again, basically. So it's got a more of a widespread audience. So I think it definitely will be a great national magazine.
I think you're right. I think it's going to be terrific. And speaking of terrific, the purpose behind this podcast, not only to entertain the masses out there, and by mean masses, I mean all three of you, it is also your hotline, your connection, your peek behind the curtain of the inner workings of Connecticut's Terrific Comic-Con, a.k.a. Terrific-Con, happening every August at the Mohegan Sun in Uncasville, Connecticut, to which I am the producer of the show. You know what, John? I realized today, being February 6th, not only would it have been my dad's 82nd birthday.
Today?
Yeah, it would have been his 82nd birthday. I just did a double take. Yeah. Not only is that, God rest his soul, he passed away about 21 years ago, but it would also be... I just lost my train of thought here. It was also going to be, damn it, what were we talking about before the show?
Your father.
No, not my dad. I know what it is. Today is also the anniversary of Big Fedora Marketing. That's what it threw my mind. I knew I was talking about Terrific Con and birthdays and such like that. I used to have... Huh?
Oh, really?
Yeah. 6 years ago. I used to have a marketing consulting group where I would do websites and advertisement and press releases and event planning and PR when I left working in corporate America, I started my own business. It was called Indie Marketing Group, I-N-D-Y, and it was named after my dog, who was named after Indiana Jones, who was portrayed by your least favorite actor, Harrison Ford. And then when I got rid of Indie Marketing, because to be honest with you, I kept getting calls from Indiana, the state, and people wanted to know if I was based there and if I would help them with their local businesses. I'm like, I'm in Connecticut. So the story behind Big Fedora is, if you know me, John, I have a large head.
Huge.
Physical, like it's a pumpkin. It's really big. I mean, it makes Bruce Willis's head look small.
Wait, Ray said this. I go, doesn't he look like Jay Leno? And he goes, yeah, he's a Jay Leno type.
Yes, I'm a Jay Leno type. Physically, I have the attributes.
That's how Ray described Mitch.
Well, anyway, I was sitting here at this very kitchen table where I do this broadcast with you, and I remember sitting there trying to think of a new name for my new marketing event planning company. And my son Owen was off to the side, and the long-running joke in our house is you can never find a hat that can fit my head, a baseball cap, anything. And I had to go on Comic Book Men, and I remember we were talking about it once, and I didn't have a hat, and I was supposed to be Indiana Jones. This is later on. But when they asked me about it, I realized I didn't have a fedora, the hat that Indiana Jones wears, that fits my head. And I almost had to get a custom-made hat. Because I have such
Mitch,
a...
We should also mention that episode that you were on in Comic Book Men was the most watched episode ever, correct?
It was. It had more viewers than listeners of this very podcast here. Comic Book Men Season 4, episode titled Super Baby, was the highest rated ever. And I was I was on that show as Indiana Jones. But anyway, that's the origins of Big Fedora Marketing. 6 years today. Happy anniversary to the 6th anniversary of Big Fedora Marketing. I'm all over the place today. But anyway, yeah, since then we've been producing fan-filled fun events in Connecticut, our home state. In fact, I'm about to do... Wait a minute, I'm just counting them up. I'm about to do CT GamerCon in March 24th and 25th at Mohegan Sun. That'll be the 8th production. And then come August, that'll be the 9th comic book fan event, whatever you want to call it, pop culture. That's a lot of shows, man. Anyway, I digress. What's up, John? What's up?
Okay, so that's a great thing. But I wanted to point out something.
Yeah.
Did you say you were, am I rubbing off on you in more ways than one? Did you say you came off the cycle today?
Yes, John. I have been.
Let's throw this out. As Mitch knows, and a lot of people do know, I'm a health nut. I don't drink, I don't smoke, never did drugs, neither did Mitch. But I've never drank soda, I've never drank coffee, I'm only strictly water. I haven't drank, like, crazy, I'm OCD to the max. I do like sweets a little bit here and there, but very rarely. But, as Mitch knows, like, when he calls me up to, because me and Mitch are early birds. Mitch can't sleep because of stress, yeah. I just don't sleep. And me and Mitch will talk, we'll send texts to each other at 3 o'clock in the morning, either bashing each other or figuring stuff out or what have you. But Mitch knows when we wake up early to do this podcast, I'm always like, I got to train first because I always do the bike every day, 40, 50 minutes.
Yep.
And I do my weight training every single day. But Mitch would be like, I'd always tell Mitch, I'll call you back, or he'd call me up. I'll be like, I'm training, we'll finish it, we'll run that down, blah, 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 blah. Now, all of a sudden, I'm rubbing off on Mitch. Mitch was saying to me, by Mitch's quotes, I look like Ulrich the troll.
Yeah,
he saw a picture of himself and says, I look like Ulrich, which I thought was one of the funniest things he's ever said.
Ulrich is, for those who don't know, one of the Thor bad guys. He's a very troll-like.
The champion of the rock trolls.
Yes, correct. I did look like
Ulrich. He always thought Thor. But one time I was asking him about his wife, and he said, oh, she's on the treadmill. Well, my kids are here, and she's on the treadmill. So I mean, on the bike. And I was thinking, like, Jesus, you know, you got that there, let's go.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, we're talking to Mitch now, and now Mitch has started. This is a good thing.
I know. Well, yeah, ironically, if I go back and look at young Mitchie, as we all know, the long-lost tales of young Mitchie, was a chubby little bastard. And then when I got out of high school, I went to an all-boys Catholic high school, Notre Dame. And then when I got to college, I suddenly realized there was women. Because when you're in an all-boys school, you could care less. But when you see that there's the fairer sex around, and you look at that and you go, hey now, that's something else. I quickly lost weight. I was very heavy, and I lost literally, I think I lost 120 pounds, maybe? 110 pounds, something crazy. I was really big. I was obscenely. I was.
Yeah, I know. I remember.
Like, no. I was morbidly obese, but I'm just saying I lost all the weight. But the thing is, I didn't have any diet plans like they do nowadays and all that stuff. I remember just eating salad with tuna fish and vinegar every day. That would be my lunch. The protein would come from the tuna fish. I'd eat salad. I put vinegar on it for some reason, and I had an exercise bike in my room, and this is in the 80s. And I remember I would watch a VCR. We had a VCR. I'd watch every freaking movie we owned 1,000 times riding that damn bike for hours. I would come off that bike. I looked like the Swamp Thing. I was dripping with sweat. There must have been a bucket of sweat underneath me. And in like from January to September, I lost 120 pounds. And never once did I think it would come back. But lo and behold, it comes back over those years. So. I was even a Nautilus instructor. Remember Nautilus?
Oh, yeah, I remember Nautilus.
I was a Nautilus instructor, believe it or not, when I was young and in shape. And then I discovered cookies.
But I'm glad that you're doing that, Mitch. And I just think anybody out there, you know, diet plans and all that stuff, I've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
But you know, moderation is key. But as long as you exercise, I mean, you're not trying to win the bodybuilding competition, but you should get a little healthy because we got a lot of plans and we have a lot of future plans together that we need to take care of, and I need Mitchie nice and healthy.
Well, and that's almost the subject of today's show. Last week or 2 weeks ago, I can't remember when, we talked about those ads in the back of the book, the Charles Atlas and things like that. But do you remember, was it in the 80s when the Arnold Schwarzenegger teamed up with, was it Nancy Reagan for the President's Fitness Challenge when they wanted kids
it's funny that you actually say that because you're giving me goosebumps. Do you remember he took that tour national? He went all across the country?
Correct.
Okay, the funny thing is I live in Waltham, Mass. But when I was a little kid and I grew up in Waltham, Mass, he came, Arnold Schwarzenegger came when I was in high school. I was in ninth grade. He came to the center of town. And that program he was with, like being that fitness instructor, and he was getting kids into shape. I was there, and I was on my friend. He's dead now, Dan Catino, who was a big lifter back then. Ironically, he died of drugs, or whatever, years later. But I was on his shoulder, and I remember pointing to Lou, trying to flex, Arnold, and he looked at me, and he gave me a thumbs up, and I was like, oh my God, he saw me! But it was at the Common, the Common of Waltham, that he came around. Just wanted to throw that out there with Arnold.
And I just remember the 80s was a physical fit time. I just remember, like, you had Olivia Newton-John, Let's Get Physical, aerobics started. Remember there would be those, like, early morning, now looking back at it, I don't even know. It almost seems like some type of, I don't know what. There would be these young ladies that would come on in these aerobic outfits, and they would be in a white room, and it would be like a mirrored stage, and they would do aerobics. Do you remember that? And the camera would turn around them.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, people have to understand. In 1975, it was that the documentary of Pumping Iron came out, which had Lou Ferrigno, Franco Colombo, Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it made Arnold a household name. At that time, he was thinking of retiring because he was the greatest in the world, blah, 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 blah. But they had him stay for one more show. For this documentary, and it blasted his career, obviously, but it also ushered in the fitness industry. So that's what, and that was the late 70s, and then and that's why Arnold was the spokesperson for the Bushes and all that stuff. But in the 80s, that was that huge boom. When you just said Nautilus, the Nautilus machines all came out,
yep,
all that
stuff. Yep. No, but anyway, I just remember there was a big fitness craze, more so than ever, in the early 80s, and then it just went on from there. Speaking of Arnold, hold on a second. I got to ask you a question because you're the Arnold expert.
I was just going to say, you got to credit Arnold for that. But go ahead.
Speaking of Arnold, and always speaking of Roy Thomas, you earlier mentioned how he said I looked Jay Leno-esque.
Jay Leno type.
I knew Arnold Schwarzenegger from his appearances. He'd be on like the Dinah Shore show, which was like a early morning talk show or late afternoon. And he'd been on Mike Douglas and Merv Griffin and Johnny Carson. These were all the shows. I remember he did a movie by Hal Needham, who was the guy that was a stuntman and became a director and made all those Burt Reynolds stunt Smokey and the Bandit movies and such. He did a movie that was supposed to be a living cartoon. And they really wanted to take those old Warner Brother Wile E. Coyote cartoons and make them a live action. This is without special effects and cartoons. The movie was called, I believe it was called The Villain. And Arnold was the hero. And I believe, did he dress up in white for that movie? Do you remember, do you know this movie called The Villain?
The was that Western one?
It was a Western, yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was very... It wasn't a good movie. I just remember it came out, I'm going to say, like 78 or so.
No, it actually was before that, because I don't know if you remember, his first movie was Hercules in Brooklyn, and where they even, it was I think it was like in late 69 or early 70, 71.
Wait, 69? How long has Arnold been around?
Arnold came to America in it was like 1970 when it came out, but he came in like 68. 68 he came. He was, that's when Weider brought him over here. It's like something like that. And it was in the late 60s. He was already starting to get known. But it was called Hercules in Brooklyn, and I think it had a couple other titles. He was so green that they dubbed his voice. So he was this guy that looked like a... Check it out. Anybody wants to go online. It's called like Hercules in Brooklyn. It was so bad. It was the first thing he ever did. But that one that you're talking about was a Western. And I don't think he really talked in that one either.
No, that was the whole point. I think it was supposed to be like a cartoon. And...
riding a carriage a lot? Like, I can remember... Dude, that's a weird one.
Yeah, as we're talking about it, I'm looking it up on the old internet. It came out in 1979, so it wasn't too far off. Actually, Kirk Douglas is the... Yeah, that's it. And that's all called Kirk Douglas, Michael Douglas's dad, was the bad guy. And he was pursuing Arnold Schwarzenegger and Anne Margaret. And, yeah, he rode a stagecoach, and he keeps being foiled along the way by a handsome stranger in white, played by Arnold Schwarzenegger, directed by Hal Needham, came out in July of 1979. Yes, that was the movie. It's got a 5.4 out of 10 stars on the old IMDb here. It's just a bad movie. But the reason why is, the other day you were telling me, we were talking about Conan the Barbarian and such, because Marvel now has the rights back to the license and they're going to start doing Conan comic books again. But who was the one that suggested Arnold Schwarzenegger portray Conan the Barbarian?
Yeah, this is an interesting story with Roy, because Roy was out in Hollywood with Jerry Conway at the time in the late in the late 70s. That's when he was trying. That's when they made Fire and Ice. That came out in the 80s, but he was trying to. They were trying to do movies out there, and he met Arnold Schwarzenegger in the mid 70s. It was in the mid 70s. I can't remember everything. We're going to have Roy. Eventually, we're going to get Roy on, and he can tell the story. But a few years later, in the late 70s, he met the director of Conan, but the guy wasn't directing Conan yet, but they were thinking of, he was thinking about it, and he knew Roy from, obviously, bringing Conan to the masses in the early 70s,
right.
Brought Conan to Marvel Comics and stuff, and made that what it was, and ushered in the whole sword and sorcery era of comic books. But he was talking to that director. What's the name of the director?
Milnes.
Yeah,
he was a screenwriter for years. He wrote Apocalypse Now with Coppola.
Exactly. But he was telling him he was thinking of doing a Conan movie. And Roy just suggested this. He said, like, oh, I met this bodybuilder, and he said his name was Arnold Schwarzenegger because he was trying to get into movies, doing all this stuff. And Roy just said he would be a pretty good Conan. And Roy said, lo and behold, Conan came out in 82, I think. Lo and behold, you know, Roy doesn't want to take the direct credit for it, but he did suggest it, and he said he was surprised to see when Conan came out, Arnold Schwarzenegger was Conan the Barbarian. You could say he kind of essentially started Arnold's career.
Yeah, that was, well, because we see 1982 is when Conan the Barbarian comes out.
Mitch, I'll tell you this about Conan. For me, I don't know if you remember, but there was a TV. There was something called like Star Channel where you had to order it to get the movie. You had to get that movie on TV. Do you remember that?
Like,
I don't
know, you had maybe like a pay per view type of thing.
Yeah, it was a pay per view, but you actually had to get a box. It was in the early 80s. The reason why I'm telling you this is because for some reason, on my TV when I was a little kid in my mother's room, I think the people next door had it because we could. I could somehow get a little of that. Like, it would be a squiggly line.
Yeah, scrambled TV. It would be scrambled.
Yes, it would be scrambled. And I don't know, it wasn't intentional, like I said, but I remember my cousin, who was older than me, telling me Conan the Barbarian was this great thing, and, you know, me being through the comic books, and I was so young at that time. But I remember Conan came on that TV, and I was watching it, but it was scrambled, it was all squiggly.
Oh, yeah.
But I have to tell you something. The funny thing is, that was the first time I saw girls' boobs on TV.
When you said that, I was thinking they had something there called Wometco Home Theater. And it was on channel 67. It was on UHF channels. And what it was is you need that decoder box to unscramble the signal. I know exactly what you're talking about. Because
it was something that was happening.
Yeah. It would come on at night, and they'd scramble the picture. And if you watched it long enough, now and then you could hear the dialogue, but the picture would be all blurry and squiggly lines, and you'd catch body parts. You would look at stuff. And it was, yeah, I do remember that. And they would show movies. I remember in the early 80s that coming around, yeah.
But I couldn't believe Conan was on that because I could, you know, it was rated R. And I begged my mother to go. I remember seeing the picture in the paper because all I thought about was the comic books.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was rated R because, you know, they made it the way it was supposed to be. But I remember seeing boobs for the first time because Conan, they bring the girl into the cage when he was fighting everybody. And then he makes love to her, but he did what he had to do. But I mean, I remember seeing that. I never saw that before. And I'll tell you another movie I saw on that scrambler, which I'll tell you right now was not good to see. The very first Death Wish with Charles Bronson.
Now, those movies were harsh back then. They were not like...
I was like 5 or 6 years old, and I saw them rape the girl.
Oh, all right. Well, that's enough of that.
No, but that was... So, you talk about why I'm a little off. I mean,
I would say, if that's... We blame scrambled TV signals for your problem. No, I'm looking at the IMDb for Arnold Schwarzenegger. Conan the Barbarian, 1982. What would you give Conan the Barbarian? I'd give it out of 10. I'd give Conan a 7 or 8. It was good. Wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, I'll give it a 7 or 8, but the reason why I mark it, I'll even take it up a notch to 9, is because of the music. And I'll tell you this. I don't own, like, a lot of, in my car,
soundtracks.
Like, I have a ton of CDs. I don't own a lot of, you know, music. Obviously, Star Wars is great, Superman's great, but I don't own those. But I do own the Conan the Barbarian soundtrack. I think that music fit that movie so perfect that it was just, when he was at the Tree of Woe.
Well, I remember the opening credits when they were pounding the music with the drums and they're showing the steel.
Oh, I mean, it was, and how about when he was turning the wheel? When he was
the Wheel of Pain.
And then he rises his head, and then he's like, he's an older guy then. But with the mutant, that's why I get Conan the Barbarian and that.
And then it had, one of the problems I have with that movie is the wigs. I mean, James Earl Jones' wig is Thulsa Doom. Always bothered the hell out of me. I'm like, what the hell? You know? What is the Riddle of Steel? Remember that?
Well, the Riddle of Steel was the, who's the guy that played Darth Vader's voice?
James Earl Jones.
Yeah, James Earl Jones. But it was, if you have more steel, I think, then don't quote me on this because I could be wrong, but if you had more steel, you were the conquerors. And at that time, when he killed Conan's tribe and they were doing all that, they were just trying to collect weapons. And that's why they were butchering all those villages and stuff, and then they would get the slaves and stuff, and it was because of getting more steel, more weapons than the other people. And I'll tell you something, the Grimlock's first song on Crusher was called The Ritual of Steel, and I named that song after the Conan the Barbarian movie.
Well, there you go. So anyway, as we were saying, Conan the Barbarian, Arnold Schwarzenegger, people getting physically fit. Unfortunately, they were planning on, I think they were doing about 9 or 6 Conan movies. They were going to do like Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Adventurer, Conan the Avenger, all these Conan movies. But lo and behold, somebody had the great idea, and I remember seeing Arnold on the Johnny Carson show saying, well, we made this new movie, Conan the Destroyer, in 1984, but we made it lighthearted, like Raiders of the Lost Ark. We want the kids to come and see it. So that was a big misstep, because they should have kept it brutal, violent, barbaric. But no, they went for humor, and they brought in Will Chamberlain, and they just went goofy on this one.
And hey, Mitch, let me throw this at you. Who wrote the screenplay?
That would be Mr. Roy Thomas and Jerry Conway. I hope they cashed the check on that one.
Okay, and I'll tell you something, because I asked him. Believe me, I had to ask him about that.
That movie's a piece of crap.
He told me how hard it was to write a screenplay, as you can imagine. But they wanted, they had to put the creatures in there, and they had to make it more kid-oriented, because Conan got popular, and they were trying to get more of a younger crowd in there. And so they told Roy and Jerry how to write that. Like, they said, you got to put this in there. And they were like, oh, my God. And so they had to work with what they... It's almost like, you know, they gave them the crayons, and they had to work with
yeah.
the color.
Yeah, stay within the lines, yeah.
Yeah,
It was that. Now, on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd give that movie a 3.
Yeah, I will. But I will admit, Olivia Diablo, who was the older sister in the Wonder Years, was hot as...
She was a cutie. There's two Diablos. There's Olivia, and then she's got a sister, doesn't she?
And I saw her, I think, don't quote me on this, but at a Super Mega Fest, about 10 years ago.
Yeah, no, she was at one of them. I remember.
Yeah, and she still looks pretty good.
She's still in movie. Now and then I'll see her name pop up here and there. But and Sarah Douglas, who played Ursa, the Kryptonian villain in Superman 2, she was the evil queen, remember?
Yeah, and here's another thing.
What?
Really suggested Grace Slick to be in Conan the Destroyer.
She is in that movie.
Yeah, he said, because they created that character. I guess, once again, we're going to have Roy to tell the details, but I think that character was supposed to be a guy. And it's a real character from the Conan.
And they made it Grace Slick.
What was her name? Zulu? There was something like that.
I can tell you right now, the name of the character portrayed by Grace Slick in Conan the Destroyer was... Grace Jones, not Grace Slick. Grace Slick is from Jefferson Airplane. Yeah. Grace Jones, she played Zula.
Yeah, Zulu, because I Zula. And that was supposed to be I guess that's a male character.
Yeah, yeah.
African-American character, but they changed it to a girl, and Roy suggested Grace Jones to be it because she was big. She was a big model at that time.
Maybe if they got Grace Slick instead, it would have been a better movie. Some of the other people that shouldn't have been in that movie. Well, there's Pat Roach. Now, Pat Roach, to me, is a big deal, because he's the bad guy in Raiders of the Lost Ark and Indian...
Wasn't he Bob the Goon? Wasn't he Bob the Goon?
No. You're jumping ahead of yourself. Pat Roach is the big muscle guy.
And
Raiders, he was the Nazi that got beaten up by Harrison Ford and got chopped up by the airplane. And in the same movie, he plays one of the Sherpa guys in Raiders of the Lost Ark in the beginning of the movie that gets burned down in the bar in Nepal, gets shot and killed. And then... In Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, he's the big thuggy guard that Indiana Jones fights, and he gets squished by a rock crusher. And then he's in The Last Crusade, only briefly, though, because he was dying of lung cancer at that point. But he was a huge bodybuilding muscle guy, and that was kind of the running joke that he's in the Indiana Jones movies again and again and again. But in that movie, sir, he plays Man-Ape Thoth Amon, which is also a Roy Thomas creation. He's the Man-Ape. He's the bad guy, the big dude on the horse. Did you know that was Man-Ape?
No.
Yeah, I'm looking at the credits right now. It said Man-Ape. Now, I thought Man-Ape was a Black Panther villain, wasn't he?
Yeah, made it. And he's going to be in the...
yeah, but they changed his name. But I'm just saying, according to this this credit list, this cast list, his character... You should ask Roy that. Did you know that Manape, played by Pat Roach, was in the movie? I didn't know. Why would he be in the Conan movie? It doesn't make sense. But anyway, Will Chamberlain was in it. Mako. Tracy Walter is the guy. He played Malik, and he was later Bob the Goon in Batman. But yeah, overall.
Was he in a Goonies movie? No,
that's Joe Pantoliano. Anyway, it's a piece of shit. It's a bad movie. There's no sugarcoating that. Directed by Richard Fleischer, who was known for his comedic roles. Who also
remember Entertainment Tonight that used to be on at
night when
we were younger? I remember they said Conan the Destroyer is a big muscle-bound boar. That was the review they gave it.
But then Conan doesn't leave the world of sword and sorcery. I mean, Arnold doesn't. He comes back in 1985 with Red Sonja, and he played the hero in that movie called Kalidor, which was really just Conan the Barbarian, but they didn't call him that for some reason.
But wasn't he in Terminator after that?
He was in Terminator, yeah. In between Conan the Destroyer and Red Sonja, we had the big hit that would, you know, his defining moment, his career-building character was the Terminator. He played the bad guy in James Cameron's 1984 classic. Then he comes back in Commando, Matrix. He played that character. Now, what's funny about Commando, do you know?
Alyssa Milano was in it, right?
Yeah, besides that, who wrote it, though? One of your favorites.
I don't know.
Jeff Loeb. Marvel's Jeff Loeb wrote Commando. I bet you didn't know that.
No.
Yes, he did. That 1985, it was one of the first movies he wrote. He also wrote Teen Wolf, and he wrote another Arnold movie, too. Yeah, that's Jeff Loeb, the man who's now in charge of all Marvel's television productions. You did not know that, did you?
I did not know. Are you sure?
I always knew that, and I'm just looking at it right now.
Okay.
And then there was Raw Deal, which was another Arnold movie. I saw that in the theaters.
One of his best ever comes after that.
And then The Predator, 1987. He had a string of hits. I'm telling you, I'm looking at it now. When you realize year after year you got these hits, Conan the Barbarian, misstep with Conan the Destroyer, but then comes back with Terminator, misstep in 85 with Red Sonja, but then comes back strong with Commando, Raw Deal, Predator in 87, The Running Man in 87, which was with Richard Dawson as the game show host. That was a Stephen King story. Then in 88, we've got Red Heat, where he's a Russian. Remember that one? He was a Russian guy here in America. He teamed up with Jim Belushi. Then he tries his hand at comedy in 88 as well with Twins with Danny DeVito, which was funny.
We should somehow do a sketch of that.
Yakety yak. Don't talk back. Yeah. And then he keeps, I'm telling you, he keeps going, man. 1990.
And then Total Recall.
Total Recall, 1990. Then in 1990, he does comedy again and got Killer Cop.
Oh, so good. Kindergarten Cop was fantastic.
And then the best one of the Terminator films, in my opinion, Terminator 2 comes out in 91. There was no stopping this guy.
It was like Stanley and Jack Kirby just pumping out the hits.
And then we go crazy. Let's see, what else do we have? We have
The Last Action Hero
that comes out on my wedding day itself, June 18th.
That was
a bomb. June 18th, 1993, the day I got married. It came out on a Friday. I got married, and I wanted to go see that movie, and it was told it was a disaster. And that was his first misstep. But then he comes back strong.
Oh, my God.
True Lies, which basically is the Nick Fury movie.
That in Predator, you can watch today, and it's still so good.
Is it Charlton Heston? Charlton Heston plays the leader of the organization. I think he has an eye patch. Isn't that basically like Nick Fury?
Yeah, it could be. And then Jamie Lee Curtis, my God.
Oh, my God, Jamie Lee Curtis. Maron. And then he's got Junior in 94. Oh, and I think this is where we start going. I remember Eraser came out on my birthday, July 10th, 1996. I saw that. I was third.
You're missing a few steps.
No, I skipped over Junior. We're going to get to this one. I saw that on my birthday with my old boss, Peter Anderson, who's no longer with us because he and I used to go to movies together. Great guy Pete was. I was 30 years old. I remember seeing that.
That was not a good movie. Okay? Eraser. Excuse me.
Bush.
Jingle All the Way,
which my kids still watched to this day, which starred a young Anakin Skywalker actor, Jake Lloyd, as well. Had Sinbad in it. Had Robert Conrad. They were looking for Turbo Man.
Jingle All the Way. That wasn't so bad.
That was okay.
It was okay. It also had the late, great Phil Hartman from Saturday Night Live. He was tremendous.
I think the worst in that was Sinbad. Oh, I never
Sinbad was over the top. He was. But here's where we come back to comic books. This is the beginning of the end, I think, of Arnold.
Yes, it's over here.
Batman and Robin, where he plays Mr. Freeze. Now, when I first heard that, I was like, you know, that's a pretty good idea, because I remember Mr. Freeze being played by Otto Preminger in the show. He had a German accent, you know? But that movie, Batman and Robin, has to be, I don't know. I try to justify it and think it's like a parody of the Adam West show. And if you look at it that way, it's not so bad. But it's a piece of crap as well.
Ugh.
It's just over the top, neon colored dance routines. They're doing that ice skating stuff. They've got that elaborate.
I never even really saw it, Mitch. Never even.
Really? I saw it in the theaters. I remember getting the movie posters. Yep. Oh, that was 1997. That killed the Batman series. That had, on paper, George Clooney as Bruce Wayne and Batman. That's actually a pretty good idea, you know?
I thought it was great, too.
He's got the physicality. He's big. He's not scrawny like Michael Keaton. He's not a weirdo like Val Kilmer. Looks a little wacky. That was perfect casting. He was the debonair, suave Bruce Wayne. You could see that. But Batgirl was in it, and Robin, and they had all the toys. It's just, in fact, it's known throughout Hollywood, and the director, Joel Schumacher, has come out and said that was a movie made by the toy manufacturers, because they just gave all these like plans for these little action figures and play sets and vehicles, and they said, here, put this in the movie. So the man actually made a two-hour commercial, is what it was. It was bad.
And it was not only the worst Batman, but that is the beginning of the end of Arnold's pretty much film career.
Yeah, because I'm looking at everything that comes after that. End of Days, I don't even think I saw it, 1999.
Everything just started, he just couldn't do it. Then the Sixth Day, I never even saw it.
The Sixth Day here. Collateral Damage, I never saw that one. Terminator 3, I did see that in the movie theaters. Again, that came out in July around my birthday. That one was pretty crappy as well, you know?
Oh.
And then he leaves Hollywood. He leaves us
No, wait. He does Around the World in 80 Days in 2004. It was a smaller...
Oh, yeah, 2004. You're right. And then he does The Kid and I. These are just bad. But when does he become governor? At what point does he leave?
Now he does. He starts. That's when he goes away, because he takes basically a six-year sabbatical from movies.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't come back until The Expendables, that Stallone movie with all the action stars. And then he tries coming back with The Expendables 2. The Expendable movies are good. Last Stand, nah. That's an escape plan. I think him and Stallone are in a prison or something. That was bad.
Sabotage.
Sabotage, yeah. Expendables 3, again. Yeah. 2.5 Men, he was on a TV show. Terminator, he came back, they did great CGI where he actually fought himself. That was pretty good special effects, where he played the younger version of himself. But that's it. And right now, apparently there's a rumor of The Legend of Conan supposedly coming back. You know anything about that?
Yeah, but believe me, I want that so bad, where he's...
King Conan?
King Conan. But is that going to happen?
I don't know.
I'm looking at this filmography, right? And after Expendables 3, he did Maggie, then he did that Terminator Genesis that you said. Then he did Aftermath, Killing Gunther, Journey to China.
Yeah.
But I'm looking at 2018. This is what he's got. He's got Triplets coming out, which I don't think is going to be good.
No.
Expendables 4, and then coming in 2019, Terminator 6.
Yeah. I don't care about those movies are done.
Number 2, it was done.
Here's some interesting tidbits about this Legend of Conan thing. In 2005, it was supposed to happen. It was called King Conan, Crown of Iron. but it was never made. And the original director, John Milius, was connected to the film. I don't know why it never happened. That was in 2005. Maybe because he was in politics at that time. And then he was supposed to do a third Conan movie in 1997. Arnold Schwarzenegger was originally set to reprise his role in Conan in 1997 in Conan the Conqueror. However, the film never was produced. The film was rewritten to be Call the Conqueror, and it starred Kevin Sorbo, who was TV's Hercules, when Arnold Schwarzenegger declined the movie to go do Batman and Robin. Oh, that was one of those mistakes he shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
I think in 97, at the time, when he was still writing off success, that would have been a good Conan comeback, you know?
But I think that is the only... I don't know why... I don't know who's giving him his business decisions to do keep doing these Terminators.
I don't know. Maybe because he thinks...
he's collecting a paycheck.
Well, I think he has a debt he owes to James Cameron because he did the Terminator films and the... He owes him, you know, so he probably...
But I think after you see from Batman and Robin all the way till now, there have been disasters. What he needs to do is, I think Conan can save him. If it's done well, and it's the King Conan, and he's old, and he's sitting on the throne there.
Yep. I always thought that was the best. That opening monologue by Mako narrating it, like, come back to the legends, you know, the time of legends and heroes. And remember the scroll, the little scroll? It says King Conan sits on his throne with his furrowed brow.
And they say that is for another story.
Yeah, and I said that. Yeah, and then Mako gets that is another time, and then it just ends.
I think that's the one thing that can save his career, like get him back on track. I don't think Terminator 6 is going to do it.
It says the film, if it was made, would have ignored the 1984 Conan the Destroyer film. The next Conan movie will be the first one of the Conan films not to feature Mako, who died in 2006. He was supposed to be the guy telling all the stories.
And Mako's gone.
Yeah, Mako's been gone for over 12 years now. Get over it. But anyway.
They tried Conan a few times.
They tried Conan with the fella that just played Aquaman.
And that stunk.
I couldn't watch it. I could not watch it. I tried, and I just...
Do you remember the series on TV by Arnold's bodyguard?
No, I don't remember that. Was there a TV show?
Look it up right now. It was called Conan the Conqueror, I think, but it was a TV series.
Oh, I did. When was this? Hold on, Conan.
It was Arnold's bodyguard that did it for him.
I'm looking it up right now. Conan the TV series, 1997, 1998, which was weird because that's when they were going to make the movie. Ralph Moeller?
Yeah, Ralph Moeller. He's a bodybuilder, but he's one of Arnold's proteges, and he was a bodyguard for Arnold.
It's got one season, okay? It was called, that was it. Yeah, The Heart of the Elephant. They're not getting good ratings here.
Did you ever watch an episode, Mitch?
I didn't even know it existed until you just said it.
Wait. It was him trying to act like Arnold and doing all those poses with the sword. It was horrible.
Oh, you watched it?
I had to because I was a huge Conan fan.
It was 22 episodes it went. So, hey, you know. But little did we know, here's one for you. 1992, when I was busy getting engaged and married, we had Conan the Adventurer, the young Sumerian barbarian. Conan and his allies must stop a snake man wizard, Rath Amon, and his snake army from resurrecting the evil serpent god Set. Did you watch this cartoon show?
Oh, the cartoon!
Yeah.
Yes, I even had a few of the toys. That's when Conan made a little resurgence, and he actually had toys, too.
Apparently, so. It lasted two seasons, no less.
Yeah, that was okay. That was pretty good. I mean, for kids and stuff, obviously.
Yeah, it's got a decent rating.
Have you ever seen those, Mitch?
No, it's got a rating of 7.9. Zula is in there, but he's the warrior prince. He's a bigger guy, not the Grace Jones. I'm looking at pictures of it right now. Ran in 1992. See, that looks pretty cool, but it was made for TV, so obviously it wasn't violent. I'm assuming
they toned it down. Yeah, but that's why I remember Conan making a little resurgence, and I remember getting the toys because I was still real.
I'm going to go to Amazon to see if these are available. I don't think they are. I don't think.
What the
Conan cartoon. Yeah, you know what the thing of it is? The reason why I also bring this up is because you and I were already talking about topics for this year's Terrific Con for panels, and I said, why don't we get Roy to do a panel on Conan the Barbarian, because I wasn't paying attention. This past year, 2017, was the 85th anniversary of the first publication of a Conan story by Robert Howard. Is it Robert E. Howard?
Yeah, Robert E. Howard.
Who ends up killing himself, no less. He shoots himself at a very young age. He was only like, I think 36 maybe, or he died in 1936, one of the other things. Do you know anything about him? Did you ever watch the movie with Vincent D'Onofrio, who was the kingpin? The one about Robert E. Howard. Did you ever watch the movie?
Oh, yeah, yeah. With the, yes, and Renee Zellweger, I think, was in it, too?
Yeah, yeah, she's in it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was pretty good. I like that because you kind of got to know about it. Like, I think they portrayed him. What's his name?
Vincent D'Onofrio.
D'Onofrio. He's a great actor, man. Great actor.
Yeah, he is indeed. But anyway, no, the cartoon is not available. I just looked on Amazon. It shows me Gru the Wanderer, which is of Sergio Argonez. And it shows me Thundar the Barbarian, which we already talked about, which is a great show. But that's it. Did you know there was a Conan versus Gru the Wanderer? I should get that. I didn't know that.
A what?
Gru the Wanderer was a comical version of Conan the Barbarian done by Mad Magazine's Sergio Argonez, very famous, and Mark Evan Year.
And that did pretty good for a while, too.
I did. Yeah, it was really fun. But they did a team-up where they met Conan the Barbarian. I'm looking at the cover. Pretty fun.
Oh, that happened?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
No, I didn't know that either. But anyway, we're in a Conan kind of mind. Why did you like the character?
Let me do this one with you, Mitch. Yes. What do you think was the greatest Conan collectible ever? What I think, and I think...
Did they make the sword?
No, obviously the sword and all that stuff, and you know, for me or somebody like you, what would you think would be?
I know where you're headed for this. You're going for the Mego stretch. I mean, no, the Mego stretch, the Mego action figure, correct?
Yeah, I thought that was so cool. Like, come on, the Mego.
No, I didn't. That was the one, I did not get that one. I had almost every single Mego figure, but there were some I did not get. I did not get the Sue Storm one. I think they did a Wonder Woman, did they?
Which one?
Did they ever make a Wonder Woman Mego figure?
Yes, they did.
I did not get Mego Wonder Woman. I did not get the Kiss dolls. And I did not get the Conan the Barbarian one. And I'll tell you why. That hair that they had on that figure scared the bejesus out of me. It was frightening, man.
It didn't have an impression because I remember getting it off the shelf in an Oscar drug. And look, the fur one, I was like captivated. But I remember looking at the Conan. And I was like, wow, they got real hair.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was wild. And that was a great figure, though.
And I think if you ask Mr. Roy Thomas, who starts off each episode of The Power Cosmic, if there was one character he could write forever, you know, whether it be Captain America, the Avengers, or even the 3D Man, any of his creations, if you ask Roy what character he would love to continually write every single day, he'll always say... Conan the Barbarian, right?
Absolutely, Conan. And I was asking him about this. It's funny we were saying this because he doesn't like the Punisher, and I said, "Well, you know, the Punisher."
Well, he's not, that's more Jerry Conway.
No. But I'm just saying, like, I said, why don't you hate the Punisher? Because he's basically like a today's version of Conan, like kind of like a guy that's always fighting and, you know, ticket taking a beating. But I asked him about Sword and Sorcery. Why did he love that? Because he says he loves the sorcery, but he doesn't like too much of it. It's got to be a lot of the obviously the sword, because he, you know, as we know, Roy, he's a big history buff, and he likes to keep things pure to the source material, but he likes a little bit of sorcery in there and stuff, and he likes it subtle. It can't be too much, and he likes a lot of that sword stuff. And that's the way the technology was back then and stuff. That's because I asked him, I was like, how come you like that so much? But that's what he was. He loved that time period, too. And, you know, It was a great time. Great. The Hiberian Age is what it was called.
Yes, that was the Hiberian Age. I actually was a fan, not so much of the Conan the Barbarian comics done by Roy and Barry Windsor Smith, which was fantastic artwork. I loved King Conan, which had his son, Khan, C-O-N-N, that word. But anyway, did you ever read any of the King Conan? I used to collect those. Those were more of a giant-sized book.
I was so pure superhero back then. I remember seeing the ads in the Marvel, and I remember it was thick, too, and it was the John Buscema, Ernie Chan, right? They were doing the art on that, John Buscema and Ernie Chan.
Yeah. Beautiful artwork. Absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it was, but I was never into it because, like I said, I was always into the superhero. I was so pro-superhero.
Well, the reason why I was going to tell you is because the artwork, like I said, was amazing on that stuff. But we forgot, Conan the Barbarian really had a huge following in the magazines, the black and white magazines. Was Roy writing those as well?
Yeah, all the Savage Swords of Conan's, those were Roy, absolutely.
So, but now, to your recollection, have they ever compiled that into a...
No, they never have, because they did, I think they did, you know, obviously the Essentials did the Conan stuff, the comic and stuff, but I don't know if those Savage Sword of Conans the Savage Sword of Conans, it was, and then they had the Conan magazine, too, after that.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever did, I'm not sure.
By the way, the film that we were talking about earlier, you're right, I just did a double check. It was with Renee Zellweger and Vincent D'Onofrio. It's called The Whole Wide World. It came out, believe it or not, in 1996. I didn't think it was that long ago, but that's a long time ago already, 22 years ago. But that's a great movie. If you ever get a chance to see it, I don't know where it would even be found anymore, because maybe it's on YouTube, maybe it's on Netflix, I don't know. The Whole Wide World. And it talks about in the early 30s, a young school teacher, Novalyn Price, meets a handsome, eccentric, interesting young man named Robert Howard. And he's a successful writer of pulp stories, and on and on and on.
But before we end this, let me tell you a good Roy Thomas Stan Lee story that has to do with Conan that Roy told me. And I think fans will, our millions and millions of fans will enjoy this, and I think you will too. So... Stan Lee did not like Conan. He didn't like Conan because Conan was just strong. Obviously, Stan Lee was eccentric. He liked the superpowers and all that stuff. And Roy loved to write Conan because obviously he loved that stuff. But Stan would also leave Roy alone. So Roy could have, he could do whatever he wanted with that. So one day he went to see Stan and he said, Stan, you should read one of these comic books. And he goes, it was getting a lot of press, you know, especially those first few issues. So anyways, Roy gives him issue number 4, and he said he remembers putting it on his desk where you get a lot of the desks, you put like all like the, you know, the papers and all that stuff.
Oh my
stuff.
God,
like,
yeah, you could just look at
mail in, mail out, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So Roy put in issue number 4, which was Tower of the Elephant. And so he said after a few weeks, Stan never said anything about him. So then eventually he went to Stan and he said, hey, Stan, what do you think about that issue? Because Roy was so proud of that issue. And well, he wrote it and he adapted it from the book. And Stan Lee says, yeah, it was all right. You know, I'm just not that big of a comedian. Do you know that issue became the comic of the year of 1974?
I did not know that.
Yeah, Tower of the Elephant was voted the best comic book written of 1974.
By who?
And Stan Lee didn't like it.
By who?
By Roy Thomas!
No, but who voted it that?
I'm sorry, say it again?
Who voted it the best comic of the year?
The fan public.
Oh, okay. I didn't know what was the source of this.
Yeah. Well, my source is Roy Kellen. So what's funny is that it was such a heralded comic book, and if you look at that one, you know, and that was one of the better Conan stories, but right. He was so proud to give it to Stan, Stan still didn't really care for it.
Well, there you go. That just about wraps this week's episode up of The Power Cosmic. We're over again. We're almost another half hour. This is almost an hour-long episode, but we're doing Conan the Barbarian, so you got to go big when you're talking Conan, right?
Absolutely.
And there's a lot more about Conan we didn't really touch on. We just kind of mentioned real briefly the comics, the books, the characters. There was a series of novels. I remember they had great covers of those paperback novels when I was a kid. You'd see them. I think they were done by
the Frazetta ones.
And there did this other guy, Boris Vallejo, did he do some too?
Yeah, but I'll tell you something about those. And I heard this was very common. Barry, like a lot of people used to do this, but when I was a kid and I went into those bookstores, I used to rip the covers off those books because some reason I was so fascinated by it. But I heard that that was a very popular thing. A lot of people did that. They stole the covers from the Frazetta, you know. Because I didn't read a novel, but I used to steal the covers.
We've discovered a lot about you from watching softcore porn on Scrambled TV tonight and seeing boobs and also ripping
all
covers
of
off
Conan.
And vandalizing property. Real quick there, Fire and Ice, you mentioned that's an animated film by Ralph Bashy, who used to live here in Connecticut. Now, Jerry Conway and Roy wrote that?
Yes, I recommend everybody. Anybody that likes sword and sorcery, it was released to select theaters, but what they did was take the Frazetta paintings and make characters of those, you know, make a story based on all those characters from his paintings. That is one of the best animated movies I've ever seen.
Well,
it's still for this bit.
Ralph Bashy was a genius when it came to animation. I should bring him to the show if he's still around.
Well,
I love that
guy. It was so ahead of its time, but all I have to say is Dark Wolf.
They used a technique called rotoscoping. I know this from being a nerd years ago, where they would have actors do the scene and the stunts and all that, and then the animators would trace over that. So yeah. That's why the actors look, that's why the animation's so fluid and looks so realistic, because it's...
And I'll tell you this, Mitch, about that rotoscoping, that Filmation took that after. Like, if you look at the Black Star and the He-Man cartoons that came in that 84 and all stuff, they took that was Ralph Bashy, and they took that idea, and that was all taken from that.
Yeah, I haven't seen... I remember Fire and Ice. I remember seeing it in, like, Starlog magazines. I got to tell you right now, I never saw the film.
I never did either.
So how do you know it's good?
What are you saying, Fire and Ice?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, I misheard you. I have it, and I have the anniversary of it, which it has, they talked to Frazetta on there, too.
Yeah,
it has a whole make. That's the one you have to get, Mitch. Get it, because let me get it. I'm running right now.
All right, as John goes and finds his copy of Fire.
It's right here. It's the two-disc limited edition special that literally goes everywhere. They have a huge documentary on Frazetta on there too. But
I got to tell you, now you got me, because as we were sitting there, every time we do a Power Cosmic, I end up buying stuff, and my wife kills me because I have so much stuff as is. Today, coming in the mail, is my copy of the animated feature Gotham by Gaslight, which was written by Brian Augustine and drawn by Mike Mignola. The animated version of that comes out today, and here I am wanting to go out and buy Fire and Ice.
Well, why don't we do it? Let's do it on the air, Mitch. You're on your computer. Go to Amazon right now and go to Fire and Ice and buy it. Look, you get Gotham by Gaslight, which that's not even in the same universe as Fire and Ice.
Oh, will you just stop? Well, here's the problem. There's just too much out there. Today, I realize, here it is, Fire and Ice right there. You know what? I don't have to buy it. It's on Amazon Prime, which I have, so I get to watch it. I will watch it for free.
Oh, can you, and will you give us a nice review for next week?
I will, but here's the DVD collection that you were talking about, $19. Not bad, but if I have it for free, why would I do it?
Yeah, but
I'm not going to get the extras, though, you know?
Yeah, but let's see what you think about this. What I want to do, and Mitch, as a private thing, after we get off, I want you to watch it, and then you got to call me.
I will do that. Even though I have things to do today, believe it or not, I will go and watch this movie. It's only 1 hour and 18 minutes long, And yeah, the cover's beautiful. I always remember seeing pictures of it. I was always wondering what it was about. But it was rated PG in 19. It came out in 1983. Why do I remember it coming out in the 70s?
Yeah, it was in the 80s. Yeah,
it was in the 80s, really? Oh,
you got to remember, like, that's when all that Dungeons and Dragons was coming out, and like it was a lot.
I know. I might be thinking of this other film that was called Wizards, which was an animated thing, which is another story. But by the way, we're going way over. We're over an hour. There's so many barbaric movies, it's not funny. Next thing you know, we'll be talking about Ator, the Fighting Eagle, starring, you know him, you love him, you can't live without him, Miles O'Keefe, who was also Tarzan. You don't know that, do you? You never saw that
movie. Really? Yeah.
No? There's a lot of crap movies out there. A lot of crap movies.
Roy wrote a lot of Tarzan, too, though.
And he wrote a lot of crap movies. No, he did not. That's terrible. We love Roy. So come and see Roy Thomas at this year's Terrificon happening August 17th to the 19th. Roy will be there for 2 days, and we will have a Conan retrospective. We should just do that. I don't know who's left alive other than Arnold that you can bring and talk about Conan. Sandahl Bergman, I've seen her at shows. She played Valeria.
Oh, yeah, I saw her, too.
Yeah. Maybe he was at the same Super Mega Fest, you know?
Super Mega.
And Sarah Douglas, she's around. Mako's no longer with us. Grace Jones, God knows where she is. I don't know. That's it. We're not going to do it. Okay, let's wrap this one up. We're going to Conan. I mean, you can go all day on this stuff. I hit a good topic today.
It was fantastic.
Barbarians, and there's more too, the Arnold's career as well. We can real quick, what do you think the best performance ever of Arnold is? Ever.
Wait, say it again?
What's Arnold Schwarzenegger's best portrayal on screen?
Obviously I gotta go Predator, I loved it.
That's your favorite one?
Yeah, that's like my favorite movie, and yeah, bar none.
All right, I was going to go with Terminator 2.
Barbarian is there too, and so is in True Lies, but I got to say Predator. If there's anything I can watch with Arnold, Predator.
All right, Arnold, Predator. And
what about yours? And yours?
I said Terminator 2. I think that was my favorite Arnold movie.
Yeah, for some reason, I never gravitated to
it. It might have been just the special effects at the time. I was just, all I kept seeing in that movie when they showed that was, wow, now you could do Mr. Fantastic. That's all I thought.
And the little kid in there, he became
I saw him at Eddie Furlong. I was at a show in New York, a comic convention, and he and Todd Bridges from Different Strokes were sneaking in back of the place, opening the fire exit doors and going into the parking lot, smoking a cigarette. I hope a cigarette.
Yeah, he looks like
He had some troubles. Let's just say that. Eddie Furlong.
Oh, my God. Yeah, he's all done.
Yeah. he's up there. I don't even know how he's still with us. I haven't seen him in a long time, Eddie Furlong.
Okay, me and Mitch can go into different directions. All right, in the immortal words of Scott Martin.
And that's that.
And that's that.
This has been a production of Big Fedora Marketing, LLC. The folks that bring you the terrific Comic-Con, GamerCon, and so much more. Thanks for listening.